O.M. Meredith, the talk of Connecticut.
Tits for tats.
I'm Dave Anthony, Fox News. China retaliates against the U.S. while on deadline to close its consulate in Houston, Texas by today. Fox's Rachel Sutherland has more live.
Dave, Beijing has ordered the U.S. to cease operations at the Chengdu consulate in response to the closure of the Chinese mission in Houston, Texas. The Trump administration accuses China of trying to steal research from medical facilities. The Chinese foreign ministry denies the allegations and is calling on the U.S. to reverse its decision to close the Houston consulate. The U.S. Chengdu mission monitors Tibet and other areas inhabited by non-ethnic Chinese minorities. Dave?
Rachel, the coronavirus surge has led to three straight days of 1,000-plus deaths in the U.S. for the first time since May, as Republicans nixing the plan for a convention offshoot in Jacksonville, Florida. Big events canceled.
Setting the example is very important. It's hard for us to say we're going to have a lot of people packed in a room and then other people shouldn't do it.
President Trump says he'll still do a nomination speech in some setting. Republican delegates will still gather as planned in Charlotte. A new Fox poll has the president down big in three battleground states. A Democratic challenger, Joe Biden, has a 9-point lead in Michigan. He's up by 11 in Pennsylvania. It's a 13-point edge in Minnesota. The president continuing to push to send more federal officers to help cities he says are having surges in crime, but Democratic mayors aren't interested. He tells Fox's Hannity,
we could solve it. If they invited us in, we'd go in with 50,000, 75,000 people. We would be able to solve it like you wouldn't believe and quick.
Early this morning, Chicago removed a Christopher Columbus statue in Grand Park days after protesters tried to tear it down. A storm is bearing down on the Gulf Coast.
Hannah just became a tropical storm within the last couple of hours, expecting a landfall within the next 12 to 24 hours along the Texas coast.
Fox meteorologist Janice Dean, Hurricane Douglas could hit Hawaii this weekend. America's listening to Fox News.
At Fisher Investments, we do things differently, and other money managers don't understand why.
Because our way works great for us.
But it may not work for your clients. That's why Fisher Investments is a fiduciary obligated to put clients first. It's the highest standard for a financial advisor.
So, what do you provide? Cookie-cutter portfolios like the rest of us?
No cookie-cutter portfolios here. Fisher Investments tailors portfolios to meet each client's goals and needs.
But you do sell investments that earn you high commissions, right? And make commissions when you make trades for your clients?
No, Fisher Investments doesn't sell any commission investment products, and we never earn commissions on trades.
So what's in it for you?
Fisher Investments fees are structured so we do better when our clients do better. When it comes to helping clients achieve a comfortable retirement, we're clearly different. Visit FisherInvestments.com to find out why investors like you switch to us. Fisher Investments, clearly different money management.
Investments in securities involve the risk of loss.
The CDC is out with new guidelines on reopening schools, calling it critically important to safely get kids back in class, fretting that closures had negative consequences on children.
President Trump says schools should reopen, that the evidence backs it, and that children don't suffer from the virus like adults do. However, he said districts in virus hotspots may want to delay for a few weeks.
The decision should be made based on the data and the facts on the grounds in each community, but every district should be actively making preparations to open.
But he says if districts don't reopen, federal education dollars should be diverted.
If the school is closed, the money should follow the student, so the parents and families are in control of their own decisions. So we'd like the money to go to the parents.
The president says he wants Congress to allocate $105 billion to help schools with reopening logistics. Jessica Rosenthal, Fox News.
Now, school kids are supposed to wear masks, and most Americans support requirements in many states and cities.
3 out of 4 Americans think mandating that people wear a face mask outside the home should be required by the government. That's according to a new survey from the Associated Press NORC Center for Public Affairs Research. The numbers show 86% of Americans say they do wear a face covering when out of the home. That's up from 73% in May.
Fox's Tom Graham, a promise kept makes two men rich.
It's the kind of thing good friends would say to each other. If I ever win Powerball, I'll split it with you. But Tom Cook and Joseph Feeney shook hands on it in 1992. Fast forward to Cook's lucky day, buying the winning ticket in Wisconsin for a $22 million jackpot last month. He called Feeney, who was already retired, and he thought he was kidding. Well, now Cook is also retired, and they both plan some traveling in addition to more family time. They took the cash option after taxes that leaves each of them with more than $5.5 million.
That's Lisa Brady. I'm Dave Anthony, and this is Fox News.
Questions on end-of-life issues can be tough. There are advantages of pre-planning as a family. Planning allows you to choose your resting place. Planning is also a wise financial decision, as costs will always increase. Let a professionally trained team of family service advisors help. The process takes about 45 minutes, so relieve the burden of these decisions from your family. Let the Catholic Cemeteries help. Call 1-800-505-0080 or visit CCACEM.org.
Do you know you might be overpaying for your Medicare supplement plan? Do you get lost in an alphabet maze of plans like A, B, C, D, and G, F? Would you like help getting out of the maze and finding the very best plan for you? We are experienced Medigap agents at Health IQ, and we are on a mission to give people like you fair and square Medigap rates. Health IQ is the only insurance agency that rewards seniors proactively working on their health, like eating right and exercising. You don't have to be an athlete to save money. We reward healthy lifestyles of all kinds. Do you take your vitamins and supplements? Do you stay active and in the know about things that impact your health? If so, you could save money with Health IQ. Let us help you take care of your Medicare supplement needs. To see if you qualify for exclusive savings on Medicare supplement insurance, go to healthiq.com/Medigap. To start saving, go to healthiq.com/Medigap. That's healthiq.com/Medigap.
Health IQ is an agency offering plans from different insurance carriers. No government or Medicare affiliation. Coverage and special rates not available in all counties or cases.
The Western Scrub Jay. I was taking my science class on a virtual reality bird watching expedition. All of a sudden, Charlie Kane shouts, "Arr! Arr!" He had spotted the elusive black swift, a bird rarely seen in the wild. For a brief moment, Charlie had not the eyes of a 9-year-old boy. He had the eyes of an eagle.
Teachers just have better work stories. Find out how creative teaching can be at teach.org. Brought to you by teach.org.
Hello, I'm Congresswoman Johanna Hayes. I pray you and your family have remained healthy throughout this pandemic. While you are safe at home, my office is still here to help. We can assist you with navigating federal agencies or just hear your concerns or feedback. We are here for you. If you have an issue with any government agency, please give us a call at 860-223-8412 or email us at hayes.house.gov/contact. Even if you're not sure if it's a federal agency, just call us. We'll help. Your safety and well-being is my top priority, and we are here for you. Call 860-223-8412 or email us hayes.house.gov/contact.
Paid for by official funds authorized by the House of Representatives.
The size of the check Terryville Chevrolet pays you for your car or truck is huge.
Lower it down.
That's a big check.
This is Jeff inviting you to Terryville Chevrolet. We're buying cars and trucks and paying way too much. So bring them by and see these amazing deals. 0% financing for 84 months. Available in all 2019 and 20 Equinoxes and Trax. Chevrolet, find new roads. Terryville Chevrolet, Route 6 Terryville, will treat you right.
Ma'am, sign here.
With what?
Lower down the peg.
Now, breaking news from the Talk of Connecticut, WDRC AM 1360, and now 103.3 FM.
Good morning. I'm Teresa Berry.
I'm Sean Murphy. Mostly sunny and 90 today.
COVID-19 in Connecticut. State health officials say hospitalizations have increased by 9, bringing the total to 72. An additional 83 new cases have been reported, over 48,000 cases now in the state. Some good news, total COVID-19 cases in Connecticut have decreased by 74 because they were reported to be false positives. In New London County, 1,352 cases, 102 have died.
Given the possibility of an uptick in coronavirus infections this fall, Connecticut's House of Representatives vote overwhelmingly to give all voters the option to vote by absentee ballot and avoid the polls. Only the House met in special session. The Senate is scheduled to meet on Tuesday. That police accountability bill will be another issue in debate when lawmakers return.
Police arrest the man suspected in the shooting death of a 16-year-old boy in Windsor Locks last month. Investigators say Daniel Baez was wanted in the killing. 16-year-old Elijah Ortega was the victim at Pesci Park back on June 24th. Baez has been on the run since. He was brought in West Haven after detectives got a tip. Baez faces murder charges and more.
Members of the New Haven Public School community gather in Hartford to share their concern over reopening plans and to call for the state to cover the cost of protecting students and teachers. Mayor Justin Elliker says he understands concerns about the return to school and they'll monitor the coronavirus spread and adjust their plans if needed.
The Connecticut Supreme Court upholds a sanction against InfoWars host Alex Jones over an angry outburst on his web show against an attorney for relatives of some of the Sandy Hook Elementary School shooting victims who are suing him for defamation. The court issued a 7-0 decision rejecting Jones's claims that his comments aimed at attorney Christopher Mattei were protected by free speech rights.
A Manchester elementary school teacher is on administrative leave after police say they found a marijuana growing operation and other drugs at her Pine Street apartment. Kirsten Durgosits and her husband Robert were arrested after police searched their Manchester apartment and found marijuana plants, growing equipment, cash, and more.
Two brothers were arrested in connection to a homicide of 19-year-old Judy Laura Velasquez, who was driving a car through Hartford back on July 6th with two passengers. Both of the brothers are from Hartford, and they're both named Edwin Frankie. The 24-year-old was arrested in Bloomfield last Friday, and they just recently arrested the 29-year-old yesterday. Both are facing numerous charges, including murder and first-degree assault. The older brother that just got arrested is being held on $1.25 million bond. I'm Chris Joseph reporting.
To you by Vector Tax, Connecticut's tax resolution experts.
In Newington, delays continue on Route 9 northbound following a serious accident between exit 29 and exit 30. The right lane is still blocked. Stop and go traffic from exit 28. In Milford, an accident. Route 15 southbound at exit 55. The right lane is blocked. Stop and go traffic from exit 56. Road construction in New Britain. Route 72 westbound between exit 7 and I-84. The right lane is closed till 3 p.m. I'm Eddie Schaefer. Time saver traffic.
Mostly cloudy skies today, getting up near 90 degrees for the high. The Serve Pro of West Hartford temperature is 76 right now in Rocky Hill.
The Morning Show with Gary Byron. You're listening to The Talk of Connecticut.
Good morning. It's Gary Byron at 12 minutes after the hour of 8 o'clock. Our next guest is a former colleague of mine in the State House of Representatives, which, by the way, as we were talking about before the break, just voted on an amendment on the police accountability bill, particularly the immunity, which ended in a 72-72 tie, which means that the amendment failed. So that portion, the immunity portion of the bill will remain as part of the language in the underlying bill. Not one of the reasons why I had him call it. I had this guy want to call in Doc Pettit, my buddy, to talk about the insulin bill. But I think there's a whole hodgepodge of bills that we're going to have to get a quick update on. So we'll welcome back to the show, State Representative Bill Pettit. Bill, good morning, my friend.
Hey, Gary, how are you?
Great. How are you this morning, other than tired?
Yeah, pretty exhausted. Been here for 24 hours. Nodded off for about 15 minutes a couple times, but I got most of the debate in. It went for a long, long time.
I know it did. I know you guys, they brought that bill out around 10:45 last night. I was watching a little bit of it while I had the ball game on. And it just reminds me of back in 2015. Ask some of our some of your colleagues there who was there back in a few years, 5 years ago, about 2015. And when they brought the budget out, it was just chaotic. We were there. We went in on Monday, and between Monday and Wednesday, we had three, 4 hour breaks. It was just crazy time. So I want to talk to you. Well, let's I want to. the whole purpose of having you on this morning was to discuss the insulin bill, because I know that you are ranking on public health. So if we can start there and then maybe end with what just went down with that police accountability bill before we let you go. Hopefully you'll be able to help us out a little bit this morning.
Yeah, because we're with the COVID, I've been in my office watching it on TV and voting remotely. You can go over to the House, but they only want 10, 12 people in the House at one time. So unless you're speaking, most of us in our office. But the one of the successes yesterday of the four bills that we're doing is an act concerning diabetes and high deductible health plans. And this is a bill that came through insurance and real estate, and it requires a pharmacist in certain emergency situations to be able to prescribe and dispense up to a 30-day supply of insulin, diabetes-related drugs, and devices. They can get one 30-day supply in a 12-month period. It limits the cost, the amount that pharmacists can charge for it. If someone's in an emergency situation, and this comes out of something called Kevin's bill for a young man who, I think it was New Year's Eve, ran out of insulin, ended up developing diabetic ketoacidosis, which is a life-threatening condition, and died for lack of insulin. So we certainly don't want people not able, you know, having a complication or dying because they can't get insulin. So that's the good news. The bad news is that given the insurance regulations, actuarial calculations, and other complicated issues, and the fact that COVID knocked us out from the regular session, and we're doing this at the end of July, not going to officially start until 22, so it's still going to be about 16 months until this starts, but it's a step in the right direction. The limits on the cost, the out-of-pocket expenses, are going to be great. I think they're going to be the lowest in the country. It can only be $25 for a 30-day supply of insulin or insulin, non-insulin drugs, and $100 for a 30-day supply of medically necessary diabetes devices, glucose strips, monitoring devices, and the like.
I understand that the normal price prior to this bill that caps it at $25 was approximately $450. Is that accurate?
Yeah, insulin for whatever reason has gone crazy in the past 10, 15 years. And 30 years ago, vials that were $30 shot up to $100, and now some of them are $400, $500, $600 a month. So the prices have gotten very high.
Wow.
When I was in practice, it's easy to throw stones, but when I was in practice, the two major manufacturers at the time, Eli Lilly out of Indianapolis and Novo Nordisk from overseas, were actually very good about samples. So I always had a refrigerator full of samples. Whenever anybody ran out, didn't have insurance, we were able to cover them with samples.
That's nice.
But given the big companies that have bought out practices and hospitals, the whole sampling sourcing has become a much more convoluted system. So I don't think that works as well as it did in the past.
There's a concern that one of our listeners brought up when I was discussing this when we first got on the air in the 6 o'clock hour. And the concern was, well, then who's really paying for the remaining balance of that? If the price was, for example, $450, but it gets capped at $25, well, that sounds great that out of pocket, the copay would be so minimal. And as you just mentioned, probably the lowest in the nation. But the balance of that is picked up by the insurance company, I would think, right? And would that result in higher insurance rates?
It'd probably be slightly higher. That is absolutely right, and I think that's what accounts for the delay, because they had already filed their rates for the next year. They do complicated actuarial calculations, deciding how many people are going to be in their plan, how much people are going to spend, and so how much they'll have to charge to make ends meet. And with this late start, those calculations won't be done until sometime halfway through next year. To allow them. So I think that was a compromise that the insurance co-chairs and ranking members reached with the insurance industry to be able to get this to move forward without much objection. So that's as a sense of the insurance concept, everybody pays a little bit more so somebody doesn't have to go without and face a life-threatening complication.
Gotcha. You know, and that would affect really everybody's insurance, not just those who have or who need insulin.
Yep, across the board.
All right. So let's switch gears a little bit. Did you vote on the telehealth bill as well?
Telehealth went through with flying colors, and essentially it allows all the telehealth that has been done during the pandemic under the executive order to continue. It expands the list of providers able to do so a bit, and it puts into statute the ability to do it not only with Zoom or smartphones or computers or pads, but also to just do it with a telephone. For older people or people who don't have access to a computer or smartphone or something where they can get a visual, that'll work for Medicaid and some of the private plans. Medicare is federal, and Medicare does not allow that at this moment. So unless the feds make a change, they'll pay for some telehealth that's video-based but not just audio-based. So that's a step in the right direction.
Yeah, definitely.
That only goes to the middle of March, and a lot of people have clamored to make it permanent, but I think we're back into a full session next January, so if it's going well between, you know, now, and it has been going well for the past few months, and it goes well between now and then, there'll be new legislation to decide what parts of it and try to make some of it permanent from a legal point of view.
You know, that's really good news. We're speaking with State Representative Dr. Bill Pettit. Before we get to the police accountability bill and the amendment that was just voted on and resulted in a tie, which means that the amendment failed, I wanted to just really briefly go into the third of the four bills that were voted on in the House during this special session, and that's the absentee ballots. We had somebody on an hour ago, one of our guests. We had Linda Sinkowitz and Dominic Rapini from Fight Voter Fraud, and they had mentioned that it's actually against the Connecticut Constitution not for absentee ballots, of course, but to extend it into such a mass volume, whether one needs it or not. I'm sure this was part of the debate on the floor. Can you just give us a quick synopsis on how that vote went down and some of the details of the underlying bill?
Well, it can be similar to, as people know, because people got them in the mail. There was a decision made under executive order for the August 11th primary to mail out absentee ballot applications to all the voters in the state of Connecticut. I think there's nobody on either side of the aisle, Republican or Democrat, that wanted to prevent someone from voting, you know, if they were elderly, immunocompromised, really didn't want to get out to the polls. We wanted to have essentially no excuse absentee voting or having the, you know, sort of fear of COVID, if you will, fear of being exposed as an excuse. And we cut to the chase at the end. It passed. There was only two negative votes. One of the negative votes was on a constitutional basis. One was on a local basis where the registrars and clerks feel like they're going to be completely overwhelmed with the number of ballots without extra people and money to help. We filed an amendment, the House Republicans filed an amendment to try to prevent from mailing the ballots, because as most people know, what you can do is, you know, I'm in Plainville in New Britain, I can call the town hall and request an absentee ballot and get it sent to myself, a ballot application, fill it out, send it back in, get a ballot, fill it out, or I could stop by any time between, if I feel safe doing it, stop by any time at a quiet time at town hall and fill it out and do so. So we wanted to not spend the money to mail them out to everybody and also have a little better control in terms of the security of the ballots. One point that received a lot of attention during the debate was the placement of ballot boxes in towns. And you saw in the news that the Vernon's doing their own system. The Secretary of State's wanted ballot boxes to be outside so they're available 24 hours. A lot of people are concerned about security. Them being out there, so they're supposed to be checked on a daily basis. Some are inside the town hall, but then that'll limit access. So there's been some back and forth on that issue. But essentially, anybody who wants to vote by absentee at this point will be able to do so. And I think that's the outcome everybody wanted. So I'd say we didn't get everything we wanted in the bill, but the democratic process will be available, and hopefully the registrars and clerks are not the clerks are not going to be completely overwhelmed with tens and hundreds.
Sure. And it wasn't going to eliminate the option to mail in your ballot as people had done in the past if they were homebound or on vacation or in the military or just elder and more or less immobile. It was really opening up for people, for anyone, for all walks of life, if they were, whether they're afraid of the of the potential of contracting the coronavirus or not. It was just, it's open for everyone. Was there any discussion of opening up for even greater potential of voter fraud? And is it even constitutional here in the state of Connecticut?
Apparently, for the absentee ballots, it is, and some people want to come back next year and put forward a bill to try to make a constitutional change to open up the. Actually, the majority leader spoke on that at the very end in the summation, wanting to make a constitutional change. So there was not many constitutional arguments on the floor. It basically had to do with the issue of mailing applications out and cost, ballot security, and the ballot boxes per se. And you're right, Gail Master Francesco made a very nice talk and argument about people could call and request ballots and mail them in the U.S. mail. They're giving them another option. I'm not sure it's completely necessary, but it is what it is. So it ended up being a compromise in GAE. I think I would say of all these bills, at least Dan Fox, the chair of GAE, and Mike France, the ranking member, Democrat and Republican, I think worked very well in a bipartisan way to try to come up with a compromise. Neither side got everything they wanted, but everybody gave a little bit. So
very nice.
I think that was actually a good example of bipartisan.
Yeah. And Mike France is just a fantastic state legislator. Right? So let's talk about this big police accountability bill. We only have about 3 minutes left, particularly on this amendment that you literally just voted on minutes ago that resulted in a 72-72 tie, which consequently had the amendment fail. If I can just get a few of you, a little comment on that. And what exactly transpired there?
Well, first of all, I'll make a philosophical statement. I posted late last night, really the debate began at about 1:30 a.m. Mm. I said, this is really a bad way to do business. This is this act concerning police accountability, and I think we need to make changes, and it's a critical issue. But this is a 71-page bill with 46 sections and 2,150 lines in it. So it's a hefty bill with many areas. And I really thought it's something that we should start early in the day with clear heads, as opposed to 1:30 in the morning to do our due diligence. So it was discussed for a number of hours, and then the amendment was called to the big sticking point of the 46 sections was Section 41, which has to do with qualified immunity, which is a form of immunity for government employees where they can't be sued, for doing their job unless they're wantonly negligent. And it's a somewhat complicated legal principle that's comes from the federal courts. And the bill wants to strip it completely. The chiefs are concerned that it will have a very deleterious effect on the officers in terms of decision making that they make in certain cases, and a disincentive for people to want to go to police academies and enroll. And would shift the burden in terms of if there are suits and costs to the municipalities, which at some level they can bear right now. So there's a lot of concerns about that. And the police chiefs thought there's a lot of good things in these 46 sections, but half a dozen sections that had troubles. And this was the biggest bugaboo. So one of the thoughts was to get it out. There's a task force going on right now on policing that hasn't completed its reporting. Mm-hmm. To let them do their due diligence, look at this issue of qualified immunity, see if there's a way it could be modified to help to still provide some protection in a reasonable fashion, but also if someone suffers injury in terms of a police action, to be able to have their day in court. This amendment was to to strip out the qualified immunity completely from the bill to make it cleaner to allow the good things to go through. And it, as you noted, it ended up a tie vote, and it was both ways. I think about 18 or 20 Democrats voted, one Republican flipped the other way.
I saw that.
People on both sides.
So this means, and I've only got about 30 seconds left, so this means that the underlying bill that you will be, I would imagine, voting on sometime this morning will not have that immunity portion stricken. It'll include that. So when that's going forward, that's how it's going to be. Really quickly, in about 10 seconds or less, what time do you anticipate taking that vote on the actual bill?
I'm guessing it's another 2 or 3 hours, depending on how much people talk. Tom O'Day just finished a long line of questioning, and now one of the Dems is up talking to the chairman, Steve Stafstrom, about the bill. So I suspect we're going to go a couple more hours anyway before we vote.
Well, thanks so much for not only being with us this morning, but providing such a detailed assessment of all four of these bills. God bless you there, my friend, and we'll talk soon.
Okay, Gary. Thanks.
You got it. That's State Representative Doc Bill Pettit. We're coming right back. So much to discuss with your phone call. Stay with us.
The Republican National Convention events in Jacksonville.
I'll still do a convention speech in a different form, but we won't do a big crowded convention per se. It's just not the right time for that.
A subset of delegates will still gather in Charlotte, North Carolina next month to officially nominate the president and work on the party's platform.
Fox's Rachel Sutherland. 3 out of 4 Americans say face masks in public places should be mandatory to help stop the virus from spreading.
That's according to a new survey from the Associated Press NORC Center for Public Affairs Research. The numbers show 86% of Americans say they do wear a face covering when out of the home. That's up from 73% in May.
Fox's Tom Graham. America's listening to Fox News.
For the past 50 years, Lynch Toyota has been here to serve our community. For the month of July, 0% on 5 of your favorite new Toyota models. Rebates up to $4,000 on select models. Extended for a limited time only. Toyota certified Camrys and RAV4s. 0% up to 60 months. Don't miss out on this saving. Always a large selection of new Toyotas and pre-owned vehicles available for immediate delivery. We are open by appointment and always open online. LynchToyota.com. Lynch Toyota of Manchester. We're here for you now and in the better days ahead.
In retirement, it's all about income. Your money, making money, and you're not spending down your principal. That can be a recipe for disaster. So if you're spending down your principal, or your money's not making money, keeping you ahead of inflation, David Scranton and Sound Income Strategies can help. Call 866-913-1234 and join us Saturday afternoons at 3 and Sunday mornings at 10 for the Income Generation Radio Program, hosted by Connecticut's own Dave Scranton.
President Trump says he likes Newsmax, and he even tweeted that it's better than Fox News. A lot of my listeners tell me they're watching Newsmax TV now and really like it. They like some of the great shows like Greg Kelly Reports. Greg is a former Marine Corps combat pilot. He's now exposing the bad guys in the media and in Washington. So check out Greg Kelly Reports for yourself. Tune in 7 p.m. and watch it. And Steve Bannon, President Trump's former advisor, is on every night, and you gotta watch Sean Spicer's show. Plus, see great shows with Michelle Malkin, Mike Huckabee, Alan Dershowitz, Herman Cain, and a lot more. Everyone is talking about Newsmax TV on all the major cable systems. Find them on DirecTV 349, Dish 216, Sling, Fubo, Cox 1068 or 68, Xfinity TV 1115, Optimum 102, Orbi 308. Just check your cable guide.
Hi, this is Carl Amari, host of Hollywood 360. Are you a fan of classic radio? Shows like Jack Benny, Inner Sanctum, Burns and Allen, and The Shadow? If so, you won't want to miss Hollywood 360, where we present the best in classic radio each week. Plus, I'll bring you celebrity interviews, trivia contests, film reviews, and much more. Hollywood 360, it's the show about all things entertainment. Saturday nights at 10 on The Talk of Connecticut.
Now, breaking news from the Talk of Connecticut, WDRC AM 1360, and now 103.3 FM.
Good morning. I'm Teresa Berry.
I'm Sean Murphy. Mostly sunny and 90 today.
COVID-19 in Connecticut. State health officials say hospitalizations have increased by 9, bringing the total to 72. An additional 83 new cases have been reported, over 48,000 cases now in the state. Some good news, total COVID-19 cases in Connecticut have decreased by 74 because they were reported to be false positives. In New London County, 1,352 cases, 102 have died.
Given the possibility of an uptick in coronavirus infections this fall, Connecticut's House of Representatives vote overwhelmingly to give all voters the option to vote by absentee ballot and avoid the polls. Only the House met in special session. The Senate is scheduled to meet on Tuesday. That police accountability bill will be another issue in debate when lawmakers return.
Police arrest the man suspected in the shooting death of a 16-year-old boy in Windsor Locks last month. Investigators say Daniel Baez was wanted in the killing. 16-year-old Elijah Ortega was the victim at Pesci Park back on June 24th. Baez has been on the run since. He was brought in West Haven after detectives got a tip. Baez faces murder charges and more.
Members of the New Haven Public School community gather in Hartford to share their concern over reopening plans and to call for the state to cover the cost of protecting students and teachers. Mayor Justin Elliker says he understands concerns about the return to school and they'll monitor the coronavirus spread and adjust their plans if needed.
The Connecticut Supreme Court upholds a sanction against InfoWars host Alex Jones over an angry outburst on his web show against an attorney for relatives of some of the Sandy Hook Elementary School shooting victims who are suing him for defamation. The court issued a 7-0 decision rejecting Jones's claims that his comments aimed at attorney Christopher Mattei were protected by free speech rights.
A Manchester elementary school teacher is on administrative leave after police say they found a marijuana growing operation and other drugs at her Pine Street apartment. Kirsten Durgosits and her husband Robert were arrested after police searched their Manchester apartment and found marijuana plants, growing equipment, cash, and more.
Two brothers were arrested in connection to a homicide of 19-year-old Judy Laura Velasquez, who was driving a car through Hartford back on July 6th with two passengers. Both of the brothers are from Hartford, and they're both named Edwin Frankie. The 24-year-old was arrested in Bloomfield last Friday, and they just recently arrested the 29-year-old yesterday. Both are facing numerous charges, including murder and first-degree assault. The older brother that just got arrested is being held on $1.25 million bond. I'm Chris Joseph reporting.
Brought to you by Vector Tax, Connecticut's tax resolution experts.
In Newington, delays continue Route 9 northbound following an accident between exit 29 and exit 30. The right lane is still blocked. Stop and go traffic from exit 28. A disabled vehicle in New Britain, I-84 eastbound at exit 35. The center lane is blocked. Slow traffic from exit 33. No problems getting through downtown Hartford, I-84 in both directions. I-91 up from New Haven. Route 2 also looking good. I'm Eddie Schaefer, Time Saver Traffic.
Mostly cloudy skies today, getting up near 90 degrees for the high. The Serve Pro of West Hartford temperature, it's 76 right now in Windsor.
This is the Talk of Connecticut Morning Show with Gary Byron. Good morning from the Talk of Connecticut.
It's 8:38. It's 22 in front of 9 o'clock. Gary Byron here with you up until 10 o'clock. Christian as well behind the controls and screening the phone calls. Hey, really quickly before we get to the phones, I know there's a couple of people already in the queue. The Food and Drug Administration is recalling a huge list of hand sanitizer, warning the products may actually be making people sick. 75 brands of hand sanitizer have been added to the recall list by the FDA because they can be toxic when absorbed or deadly when consumed. Doctors in Arizona and New Mexico are sounding the alarm after at least 10 people died and more than two dozen were hospitalized from drinking contaminated hand sanitizer, hoping to get a buzz. These products, made in Mexico, claim to contain ethanol, but instead have methanol or wood alcohol, which are toxic ingredients when absorbed in the skin and could be life-threatening if consumed, says Dr. David Agus. The FDA wasn't able to say how many bottles of the bad sanitizer were sold, but reports say they were sold at retailers like Costco, Walmart, and CVS. My best advice to you is don't drink the hand sanitizer, folks. What the hell's wrong with people here?
Really. I'm glad that you had to say that.
It's sad that I have to say that,
actually.
Did you
wake up this morning thinking, I have to get on the air and tell people that they can't drink hand sanitizer?
Yeah, it's nothing like, I can't get my day started unless I have my first cup of hand sanitizer. I don't know. The things sometimes that come across our newswire here, it's
unbelievable.
Just really makes you shake your head. All right, we're going to the phones at 860-243-1360 locally and 888-574-2723 nationwide. Gabriella in Windsor. Gabriella, good morning.
Good morning, Gary. I have tendency to speak very fast when I'm emotional.
Yes.
And sometimes I know the listeners don't understand what I'm saying. Therefore, I'm going to take my time. I hope you got a few minutes to tell what I got to say today.
Mm-hmm.
Listen, my darling. Some people have tendency to lie to themselves, believe it, and then tell people their lies and expect for other people to believe their lie. And the reason why I say that, I hope they understand me, is because if the twin brother of, what's the name of the guy from Vermont?
Bernie Sanders.
Okay?
Yeah.
If the twin brother of Bernie Sanders is a Republican, I am the Pope's wife. You got me? That guy Paul from Plymouth, and I'm going to say his name.
He just said his name.
Yeah. He's the twin brother of Bernie Sanders. He's never been a Republican. He might be an independent. And he tells people of the audience in Toco Conerico that he's this and that and the bag of chip. He is not. He is not a good Republican ever going to call our party the party of the bullies. When we're seeing what we're seeing with the Democratic Party and the Black Lives Matter and Antifa and all that stuff that is going on in the United States of America. He is not a Republican. He never has been a Republican. He might think he's a rhino, like Mitt Romney or somebody, but he definitely never been a Republican, because that's a very big disrespect to our party. Now, our conservative friends, to say that he's a Republican and call our... I got so upset about that. The bully party?
Yeah. Well, Gabriella, what he is he is a left-leaning independent. Now, what he did recently, and he even admitted this like a week or so ago, is that he, for the sake of to vote in the Republican primary, he, on paper... switched his party affiliation to Republican because he wanted to vote. He wants to vote against. Hold on, Gabriella. He wants to vote against President Trump in the primary and vote for Bill Weld. If Bill Weld, I think he's still on the ballot, but that's why he did that. I mean, anybody can do that. But personally, he once told me many, many months ago, I probably even late last year, that right on these airwaves, that he was a registered independent. He's actually a very left-leaning independent, so.
And he's Antifa and Black Matter allied. And he don't care for our police officers. And he don't care for our party. So
stop lying. I'm not going to put words in his mouth.
You have yourself a wonderful day.
Thank you, Gabriel.
The best.
You got that right. You got, that's very true, Gabriella. Our party is the best. And hey, listen, it doesn't make Paul a bad guy. He just, you know, these guys, he's entitled to his opinion like everybody else. I just happen to disagree with not everything, but a lot of what he talks about. Gabriella was a little fired up there, though.
Yeah, yeah, to say the least.
I like when that happens. Bob in Suffield. Bob, I know you were having some problems with your phone while on hold during when Gabriella was speaking. Hopefully you don't drop the call this morning. Good morning.
Okay, I'd like to get back to the issue at hand here.
You sound great.
By the way, if you go to upper state New Hampshire or Vermont, you'll be able to see the comet New Wise.
Yeah, what time?
It's going to be leaving at the end of the last.